You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next half hour or so, we're going to be talking about all things food and drink. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, Ollie Lloyd of Great British Chefs. Hi there, Ollie.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm never happier than when we've got things to taste in the studio.
I know, it's always a good week when there's stuff to eat and drink. So we've got both sides.
Yeah, that's good. So we've got some great guests as usual. I've got Elizabeth Jones of On The Menu, who make real good ketchup. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello there, Sue.
You've bought some ketchup for us to taste. We're very excited about that.
Excellent.
Haven't got any chips, though.
Sorry.
You could have bought some chips to dip in.
She doesn't sell chips.
Okay. And Joe Devereaux-Kelly of Cool Cold Brew. It's a very hot day in London today, so we've got some nice ice cold Cool Cold Brew, which I have trouble saying.
Just like my surname.
Coffee. Ollie, as always with Great British Chefs, we have some really good research and backs up what foodies are thinking and doing. I remember last year in the research, which I know you're just revisiting, there was a big thing on the store cupboard. Quite a lot of research there. So what we found is there's some top staples that people have in their store cupboard. Some interesting things, weren't they? It doesn't quite come out of the research as I would expect. I mean, number one thing in the store cupboard is soy sauce, 92%.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's such a sort of, and this is amongst foodies. So that was research we did last year amongst a committed foodie audience to understand what they had in their store cupboard. And I think what's really interesting is on one side, the food store cupboard has just completely changed and it is much more international than we would expect it, hence soy sauce. But that doesn't mean that the ketchups of the world, which we'll come on to later, have vanished. But I think what we're seeing is new things are emerging, and particularly obviously amongst a milk foodie audience who are prepared to experiment.
So we've got coconut milk, risotto rice, balsamic vinegar, olives, sesame oil, and then things like harissa, couscous, and things like that. That does show the international flavour, doesn't it? What's in? I mean, some of mine are pretty old, really. I think I probably need to go by the sell-by date by some of them and chuck them out.
Or just bung it all together and cook something like a sort of, you know, barbecue
kill
sauce.
Myself. There might be something in there from 1974.
That it'll be fine. It'll be fine, yeah.
And again, things seem to, I mean, I think this is very much us in the UK. We seem to get quite a lot of stuff that packs a bit of a punch.
Yeah, we love our chilies.
Yeah.
We love our chilies. And I think, you know, I'm actually growing four different types of chilies. Don't ask me which four. I'm worried my children are going to eat them, thinking they're sort of something red and delicious.
Is this in a window box or in your garden?
This is in my garden. Right. In my garden. We should talk actually about grow your own at some point, because it's bigger than we thought. But yeah, I mean, actually, I think people are really into trying new sauces and new spices and new things. And, you know, whether it's things like zug, which, you know, no one had even heard of a few years ago. And it's very much an emerging...
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's a sort of Middle Eastern blend of all sorts of cool stuff. It's probably the simplest way. I feel like Bella Zoo sell it. It's a very...
Zug?
Zug, Z-H-O-U-G, I think.
I've never heard of that in my life.
I'll bring you some next.
Yeah, okay.
There you go. But we're talking about ketchup. I mean, I think what's interesting, though, is if you actually looked at in the store cupboard, you know, things like soy sauce are now more popular than English mustard. And I think that talks about...
That's bonkers.
Which is bonkers, which would never have been the case 10, 15 years ago. People are just, you know, more open to international flavours. But I think we'll talk about this certainly in the world of ketchup but I think people are also starting to dig into what's in things. And I think there's certainly also a kind of desire to make sure that, you know, your brand has aligns with what you want there to be in it.
So there's an extraordinary fact, I think, here, is that more foodies have fish sauce in their cupboard than brown sauce. What's going on?
I don't have brown sauce in my cupboard.
How can you not? That's no, you need, how can you have a sausage sandwich without HP sauce? Or brown sauce, or Stokes brown sauce, or something, or one of them.
Yeah, just...
You don't?
It's just not a flavour. Like, we've got all sorts of crazy, you know, Korean sauces and... You know, at least we found one the other day. What was it? It was a chili oil with crunchy chili flakes in it.
No,
so good. They'd fried the chili flakes. So they were like crunchy. It was like, wow, we need more of this.
No, this is an absolute. Elizabeth,
we'll do a chili tasting session.
not doing chili tasting session. Elizabeth, I know. Obviously, we're going to talk about ketchup later. Do you have brown sauce in your cupboard?
I don't.
Oh, I can't believe it.
No, I think maybe 20 years in Australia put an end to that.
Joe?
We do, yeah.
Oh, good.
We do. I don't really eat it.
Brand?
HP, of course.
HP, ours is a Parliament sauce. Yeah. I'm surprised by that. And people have got more Tabasco, for example, and sweet chilli than they have brown sauce. That doesn't surprise you.
But Tabasco you need in everything from a good Bloody Mary through to...
I know you have Tabasco.
Through to, you know, you sprinkle it on eggs.
I try to educate him, but it doesn't really work.
Yeah. Too much time in Asia.
Yes, probably. So let's go back to the salt and the sugar thing and other things. With your research, salt and sugar are really top of mind, you're finding, aren't they?
They are. I mean, I think what we're seeing is that there is just this increasing understanding that a lot of stuff is put into processed ingredients that we don't fully understand. Mm. And it's that thing that you look on the side of the pack and they're just loads of weird numbers. And people are beginning to kind of go, can someone explain that stuff to me? And I think that there's sort of, I don't understand that bit. But then beyond that, there's also a thing which is at the top of the list is I want things with lower sugar and I want things with lower salt. And, you know, yes, there are lots of other things like Rainforest Alliance or Soil Association or organic, but actually top of mind is salt levels and sugar levels. And those are the two things that drive purchase consideration.
Because I don't want to just completely slag off Heinz here, but in a standard variety of ketchup, of which Heinz is obviously the market leader, a tablespoon size serving has 4 grams of sugar and 25 in the bottle is made of sugar, and that's very high sugar content, which is probably why kids love it so much. You know, you think you're getting the tomato thing, which is great, but there is a lot of sugar in there, and you know, this equates to more sugar than a chocolate chip cookie, really.
But you see, I actually think it's funny, you know, we had Frankie from Foraging Fox on, who makes a lovely beetroot ketchup a few months ago, and we've got that a lot at home. And you know, in the end, it's down to you know, if you give kids something that is packed full of sugar, you will start to expect that. But if you give them something that actually just tastes delicious, you know, actually you don't need sugar to make something taste delicious. About the way you treat your ingredients, and you can get sweetness out of tomatoes and beetroot.
The thing that I object to, though, is that the leading ketchup brands, you know, have high fructose corn syrup and GM-modified ingredients. And, you know, they cause a spike in blood sugar levels and all that sort of stuff. And that is not really what you want to start your kids off on. But I think a lot of parents don't know that. They don't realise that.
Totally. And I think this is one of the problems is that, look, we all rely upon brands. And, you know, Heinz is one of the most trusted brands in the UK. Mm. You know, they've got a campaign at the moment running about, you know, a mayonnaise campaign saying more, you know, more Heinz-y sort of thing. You know, I mean, what that means, I'm not sure. But ultimately, these brands have a responsibility. Mm. And I think that one of the challenges is that if you are in that many homes, which they are, if there are ways that they can deliver the same taste profile with less sugar, they should be doing it.
Yeah. Now, we held the Food Talk Awards a few weeks back, and I remember being on the judging panel a couple of months ago. We had a really good judging panel of very, very experienced people like John Stapleton, of who started the new Covent Garden Soup Company, and people like that really, really knew what they're doing. Now, Elizabeth's Real Good Ketchup was entered, and it blew people away because of the taste profile. I mean, absolutely because of the taste profile. And then when we looked at the ingredients, we couldn't believe how you've managed to create that. It's a really special product,
Thank you. And we really, really appreciate the feedback and the award, because it took about a year and a half to get to a point where we were happy with the recipe.
Yeah.
But it's not by a random chance that we arrived here. We set out at the beginning with a list of ingredients that we wanted to use to get to a no added sugar status on label, so that consumers would know and have confidence that our product was delivering that.
So I've tasted this loads of times because it was on the... Right, so now you're going to taste it, Ollie. Okay, so what have we got in front of us, Elizabeth? Is this the
the smoky barbecue.
I think you'd better start with the normal one.
I'll start with the normal.
Start with the normal one, see what you think.
And so you said that you set out to create a ketchup that only had a small number of ingredients. So what are the ingredients start with the traditional one to begin
with. Okay, so tomatoes, of course, number one. And the sort of the secret when you're looking at an ingredients list on any label is the first ingredient is always the largest content. So if you saw water as number one, that would be a clue as to what's going on in the product you're about to buy. So
you're going to hear us crunching in the background because we've obviously not...
I've actually abandoned the crisps. I just want to try it without the crisps.
How deep is that and tangy? You're not supposed to say something. You're on the radio, Ollie.
What's amazing is you don't notice. I mean, this is, you know, obviously in the UK, you're sort of like, I'm going to try a ketchup. The culinary memory you have is Heinz.
Mm.
And that, you know, it doesn't
taste
exactly like Heinz, but it doesn't taste like it's missing something. And I think always the challenge when you go down a sugar-free route is you kind of go, oh, but it's, you know, it's a sacrifice. That tastes just delicious. And
it is absolutely
like
delicious.
Like quality ketchup. I mean,
it's just, then that's what it needs to be. So all 14
Joe
allergens.
Get it back.
Joe, pass it back against.
I don't like crisps.
Mm. So all 14 allergens, are not present. So there's none of the allergens in there at all. And there's nothing in that that compromises what a ketchup should be, which is why the judges were so amazed. Yeah. It's got a real complex, deep flavour. But kids would love it because it doesn't feel like it's gone further from what they're used to, if you know what I mean.
No, totally. I mean, and it's got a great viscosity to it. It's
mouthfeel, colour, smell,
when you dip
everything.
You get a blob on the end because the whole ketchup experience isn't just flavour. It has to behave and perform like an expected ketchup, which it does.
So you said there's tomatoes?
So we have tomatoes. We have spirit vinegar. We have some water. In the regular, we have sea salt, and we've gone with sea salt as opposed to table salt because it's a clean ingredient. Table salt often have additives and all sorts of things buried in the small print, which we didn't want to go with. We don't put very much salt in, by the way. We have onion, garlic, and we have corn flour to help give the ketchup some body. We need to take sugar out, which is a thickener in its own right when you cook with sugar.
You lose that consistency.
Yeah, you lose that. Yeah. So you need to put something in to give it some sort of hold, if you like. And then a secret spice ingredient at the end.
I won't tell you what that is.
A secret spice ingredient.
I haven't tasted the smoky one. Well, is that smoky barbecue?
Yes.
Should we a little taste of that?
Please do, go for it. Mm. Our luxury ingredient in this is a wonderful natural smoked water from hickory and oak from Tennessee.
Wow. So smoked water?
Pure smoked water from hickory and oak. If you give it a taste and see what you think.
I'm abandoning the chips. I'm in a spoon.
That's great.
I've only got one spoon though, Ollie, so I'm not going to lick
your
spoon.
It's mine.
There you go.
Oh, that's good.
So it gives that real depth. And the wonderful thing about going with a natural smoked water of this calibre is in 12 months' time, actually, that will be even more so because it matures like a wine or a cheese.
Or when you leave a stew for a couple of days and it just gets more depth.
The more you cook, the longer you have it, the deeper the depth of the flavour goes.
Look at his face.
No, it's a really. I'm a barbecue nut. And it's interesting. I really enjoy kind of cooking on proper charcoal and really making things get that really lovely smoky flavour. And that's, I think a lot of smoky stuff can taste really manufactured. And it's a bit like, I've added the smoke capsule. It's got a real depth to it. It's got a real, it's not just a singular smoke note. There's a real kind of roundedness to it.
Well, it's not a flavouring.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What I was looking for. Yeah. Flavouring rather than capsule.
The thing that I really like about the ketchups that Elizabeth makes is they've got that lovely natural tanginess that tomatoes should have.
Mm.
Don't you think?
Totally. I mean, I think one of the interesting things, and we see this a lot, is that I think foodies are starting to self-process in a lot of cases, whether you're making your own flours, whether you're making your own breads. But the reality is time is short. And while it would be lovely to make one's own ketchup, which obviously you can do, I mean, it's, you're not, you don't need any crazy machinery to do it. Actually, it's lovely to be able to buy something that doesn't require you to compromise your beliefs.
Indeed.
And that is, that's what brands should be doing. And there are a lot of people who what you're doing there, it aligns with.
So you've got this amazing ketchup. By any standard, we've tasted a few things on this show that I found okay, but I wouldn't say this is genuinely amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic feedback. Thank you.
I know that you've got it into Whole Foods and Morrison's and Co-op. How do you compete against such a well-known domestic brand? I'm sure Ollie can help us with this with his sort of Unilever background, but how can you put yourself up against those guys with those sorts of budgets and... you know, well-known name. When you consider, in my personal opinion, it's so much better.
But I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing small brands compete with the big FMCG brands because actually on one level, the FMCG brands are so terrified of takeover bids, they're actually cutting a lot of their marketing spend. But also, when you've got an authentic story to tell, it travels better than an inauthentic story. So, you know, if you have a good story and you put £10 behind it, it will travel further than a bad story with £10 behind it. And I think that's where, you know, quality products actually start to reach and create fans and an audience.
But how do you get somebody to reach as a impulse buy on a shelf when that's next to such a well-known brand? Because it's getting people to try it. Well, as soon as they try it, I'm sure they'll be converted, but it's getting them to do still, that first taste.
We still have to do the standard mechanics that everybody does on shelf in a supermarket. You still have to do promotions and offers to get people to try.
Right.
I think one of our sort of big drivers, I think because we are on the allergen-free platform, we would have mums with autistic children, a range of different conditions where sugar just is a complete no-no. Word spreads really fast on social media. Mm. We've done a lot of reviews, you know, particularly with mums and children. We've been to schools, you know, family events, you know, we've been doing a lot of trialing and testing and feedback, and everybody talks to everybody else. Mm. Gone is the day of sort of, you know, blanket closed communication on food. And I think because we hit the sugar, the salt, the allergen free, and we have taste, you know, what more can we ask? We love the natural plant-based sweetener that we've gone for is xylitol, which is a wonderful contribution to dental health. So we thought really carefully.
But xylitol is difficult to work with. You know, it is hard to get that right.
Yes, a lot of, you know, 36 versions and we got there sort of thing. Yeah, it took a long time. Because it doesn't behave, once you take sugar
exactly.
out, it doesn't behave in the same way.
But I think also this is, look, clearly, you know, we don't need to go over the whole story of childhood obesity and the issues around that. But the reality is the desire to reduce the amount of sugar in people's diet is not a children-only issue. Mm. It's a national issue. And it's actually people, you know, while I'm not, you know, I don't support a kind of a complete, you know, as it's phrased, sugar Nazi approach to these things. I think sugar has a role in you know, I think, you know, if you, in cooking and in the creation of cakes and stuff. But actually, you know, I think that there's a large group of people who genuinely want reduced sugar things and where sugar is adding no value, you know, and I think that's the thing here.
Would you put that in the, you know, in the special aisle or would you put it in the condiment aisle?
It should be, I think the problem with ghettoising things in special aisles is, you know, I don't. I'm lucky enough to have no food allergies, so I can eat anything I want. But ultimately, you know, actually, when I walk down an aisle and I happen to go in the ketchup aisle, I need to see all the options available. And I think there's a responsibility for retailers as well to get behind these kinds of brands because actually they are a force for good. And while you don't have the marketing dollars of the Heinzes of this world, actually, it's where retailers can actually make their presence felt by supporting smaller businesses like yours, homegrown. You know, that actually has a story to tell and promote it.
Do you put them in the free from or do they go in the normal condiment?
They're mixed.
Section?
In Ireland, we sit in the health and wellness bay, which is quite a good starting point because people walking down that aisle are looking for this type of product. And they may not have allergies, but they're just looking for health and wellness, which is the more general term. In the co-op, we're currently in the regular ketchup section.
That's good. Yeah.
In Morrison's, we're in health and wellness. Ocado is obviously in the regular ketchup aisle. So it's some in one. And some retailers take the view that sugar reduction should start in a place of its own where everybody's going to look for sugar-reduced foods. And then they move them into the main aisle as we sort of evolve and come out of the nursery, so to speak.
But I would argue for dual placement. I mean, I know they won't do that and I understand why they don't do that. But the reality is that most supermarkets have more SKUs than they need. And actually, if you're trying to genuinely drive a revolution of people eating better, we need more than one nudge, you know. So actually, you've got to be dual located in order to, you know, encourage discovery, but reminding people that things are there. Because actually, the idea that you would have a, you know, I'm going to call it a properly produced aisle, and then you've got the rest of the store is just kind of bonkers, isn't it?
I think it takes it takes quite a bit of courage, I think is the word, actually, for a buyer and a retailer to say, yes, we're going to do this and this makes sense and do something different. And we're sort of seeing some changes, but it's not everywhere. You know, there's still some brick walls there.
But this is now is a time for courage. I mean, now is not a time, you know, I mean, retailers also are facing existential threats. That's why they're all merging with each other in order to make the profit margins work and to get buying efficiencies. So if you want, as a retailer, to really stand out, you've got to create a cohort of people who buy into your philosophy.
Yeah, and if there's any buyers listening to this in your mainstream supermarket, why haven't you got it in your aisle is my question. Can we move on to Joe? Because I feel like we're leaving him out a little bit.
Yeah, well, he kept stealing the ketchup.
I know.
Yeah.
Had my fair share.
What do you think of the ketchup?
It's fantastic. I really, really like it. I'd actually probably go and buy it myself when I get home.
Yeah, great.
So, and stuff, really, I mean, I think it's really clean. It's one of those things which you discovered it and had it. I don't see the reason to buy a Heinz now.
That's what I'm saying, for me.
But it's got to... That's part of the story, really. You've got to get people to taste it, and that's part of the journey, isn't it? So,
yeah. Now, let's talk tea, actually, before we talk coffee. So I've been working with an incredible tea blending company for my proper day job. And they produce something like 50 blends of tea a day. They're incredible, and they've got a master, whatever it's called,
blender.
Person, one of those. And they do these incredible things. Now, they're really pushing the fact that tea needs to break out, be different, be sexy. Actually, I think you said earlier, making tea sexy is the aim. And they're struggling because the amount of tea that's being bought is going down and down and down and is forecast to go down over the next 5 to 6 years. Coffee's managed to make itself connoisseur or different, and it's managed to challenge, I think, the absolute cornucopia of choice that you have for soft drinks and non-alcoholic drinks now. So much choice. You know, we've got coconut water, we've got melon water, we've got juices, we've got, I mean, you name it. So there's a massive competition out there. But coffee's managed to do that, hasn't it? It's managed to make itself a little bit sexy and a little bit, you know, you've got to know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I think your favourite is the McDonald's advert, isn't it, Ollie?
That's a great advert. It's a really, really good advert.
I think the problem is you've got two ends of the spectrum here, which is, on one level, coffee's done a really, really good job of making itself sexy.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a group of kind of like what I will call coffee uber snobs, who are like wine snobs, who are just, you know, kind of into the margins of... they're kind
extremity.
Of it's absurd. Okay, I get it. It's a real passion point for people. And the truth is, a great coffee, brilliantly made by a barista, is a thing of beauty. But it does get slightly absurd. And I know
it's quite funny though.
I did have a friend actually the other day who showed me a picture of their. They said, "I'm really working on trying to make my coffee just better." And they showed me a picture of like I would say one of the most beautiful coffees. She said, "I'm thinking about going to a barista and getting some lessons on how to really make it look more serious." And I'm like,
That's somebody with too much time.
I'm not going to mention her by name.
No, I wouldn't if I were you.
She'll kill me.
It's another friend, you've lost. So, Joe, explain to me about cool, cold brew, which I have terrible difficulty in saying.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tongue twister, that one, actually. We're looking to do some maybe social media content. I'm trying people to try and say that really, really quickly and see what we come out with. But
cool, cold brew.
Yeah, cool, cold brew. You can go faster.
No, I can't.
The brand... And cold brew, a similar sort of story to the ketchup, in that we're trying to bring a product range to market that's it's got a lot less sugar than our rivals, lower calories, more clean ingredients, and it's effectively a similar sort of story. The idea behind cold brew coffee and why we're trying to sort of spin this is that you get an iced coffee, and iced coffee is obviously a hot coffee that's cooled down. By nature, is more bitter than a cold brew black coffee. So when we're mixing the black with the other flavours and ingredients, we don't need to add as much sugar to create a sweeter
so
profile.
Explain to me the difference between those two things. Sorry, so you make a hot cup of coffee, you wait for it to cool down, and then you refrigerate it, presumably.
Yeah.
And essentially that's boiling water on ground coffee.
Yeah, right? That's hot. Yeah.
And the cold?
Cold brew coffee is coffee grounds in a tank or whatever you want to use, a cafetiere, brewed for a long period of time, up to 24 hours, depending on certain variables. And then the coffee grounds extracted from the liquid, and then you've got what effectively is liquid that's been infused with coffee, and that's cold brew coffee.
And obviously there's a lot of...
Do you know that, Elizabeth? I never knew that.
And I'm fascinated to know what's the difference between the cold and the hot.
Yeah, so obviously with hot coffee, coffee's when it's... heated, certain acids within the coffee are released, which creates that bitter taste that we're really used to. Mm. Whereas with cold brew coffee, you don't get to that heat point, so you end up with a coffee that's naturally sweeter. We're not saying our coffee's sweet, but it's a lot sweeter than an espresso-based iced coffee. So obviously by nature, when we mix it, we can then go with less sugar.
Yeah.
And in terms of, I know this is not central to your business model, in fact, it's actually against that on one level, but if you're making cold brew coffee at home, how are you supposed to treat, so obviously there's a whole thing about, you know, when you're making a, you know, hot coffee, it's about getting the right grinds for, you know, the difference between a cafetiere and stuff. So with, when you're making a cold brew coffee, is it about really finely ground, or is it actually about...
So the grounds we work with and we recommend people to work with is quite coarse, so almost like breadcrumbs. So it's, the reason for that is obviously then you can, one, filter it out, and two, it just the brewing and the infusion works better at that level rather than it being too fine.
Too fine.
You end up sort of
it's
over brewing
powdery,
it.
So
more coarse. I think with the problem with the cold brewing coffee itself is it's quite a difficulty behind it. Obviously, the duration of time you need to leave it overnight and whatever else. And if you're working a normal, you know, normal job, 9 to 5, you've got to put it on the night before, get up early in the morning, take it off, extract it, and keep it in the fridge, everything else. So there's a bit of an art to bring it yourself.
But my challenge would be, and I think this is one of those things that's always difficult, is that in the end, it's not something yet that is drunk as regularly as hot coffee.
No.
And I think actually, at times, brands are scared of encouraging the home brewing thing. The reality is, you're not going to be walking around with your cold brew, and obviously, you are an on-the-go brand.
Yeah.
So actually, if you can inspire more people to make cold brew at home, they will then look to a cold coffee and go, yep, let's have that.
Yeah.
Because the market is much more established in America, isn't it, than it is here?
Oh, yeah, hugely. I mean, I don't know the exact stats, but a lot of the people over there, sort of, you know, the people who are watching the market and whatever else, would say that cold brew coffee in the sort of next 10 years is going to start to outclip the iced coffee segment of the
overall
category.
They drink iced tea, though. There's something wrong with them. Because we've never embraced the iced tea thing. And that's why I think probably in America the cold brew coffee probably sits a bit better with them.
But they have possibly. they have a hotter climate, and so but it is interesting because actually, if you think about it, we do have, you know, cold winters, and actually, I mean, I will drink three coffees a day, and actually, in this heat, you don't necessarily want to drink three hot coffees a day.
No. Well, talking of which, let's have some cold. So what have we got?
We've got a black flavour here, which is sort of the original standard cold brew coffee ready to drink, and then we've got a latte, which is unsweetened. So that's just British semi-skim milk and all cold brew coffee. And then we've got a mocha, which is quite similar to this. The difference with this is got a bit of cocoa in it and also date nectar as our sweetener for that. And then finally, we've got coconut, which is cold brew coffee. It's coconut cream. It's dairy-free. It's got a bit of water in it, date nectar, and that's the full range.
I'm going to try a latte. What do you want?
I'm going to go with the original and avoid the coconut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'll be the coconut.
There we go.
I'll go.
As long as someone can take the hit for that.
So these are in sort of normal packages, almost like a fruit carton.
Yeah, so there's the Tetra Pak cartons. We chose Tetra Pak rather than obviously the whole plastic debate that's going on at the moment. We found that obviously there's a lot of negative press on the plastic. It's also because we've got a dairy-based coffee. Plastic doesn't adverse too well to shelf life.
And do these need to be, so for example, the one with milk in it, do these need to be kept at cold? Or are they?
No, these are ambient products, so it's really good for sort of storage and distribution. But in terms of, obviously, we'd always recommend serving these chilled. These are sort of, I'd say,
semi-chilled at the moment.
Slightly chilled. Mm.
So I've just tasted the latte. I'm so sorry, I don't like that, Joe.
Oh, don't you?
But okay. I don't like any cold coffee.
Oh, right.
So that's probably why. It's nice if it's salt, though, but I just can't adapt to cold coffee. I don't know why. Just doesn't do it for me.
I mean, it's interesting. I lived in America for a while, and
you
I would
get
always
coffee with ice in it. I just like that.
Yeah, so
every morning
I used to commute out of Grand Central Station, and I used to have an iced coffee every morning from a little cafe that was in Grand Central Station. And so for me, in the kind of heat that you're in, I think that's a really
perfect
nice drink.
Yeah.
It gives you the hit of coffee. And, you know, the one I've just tried, which is the black one, has no sugar in it. It's very singular. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a classic coffee.
Yeah.
Can I try the latte as well?
So that's the black double shot coffee.
Yes, the black is
that Ollie would recommend.
And actually, the one with the coconut's delicious. I'm not overly a fan of coconut milk. It's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
But absolutely delicious. That would be lovely with some coconut ice cream in there.
There you go. Top tip
coconut
from Elizabeth. Yeah, so I'm sorry about my reluctance. No. It's just a genre that I don't like, I think.
But it's interesting because actually, if you think, one of the things that we've talked a lot about is, you know, where is there space for innovation? Where are there space for brands to kind of engage and grow? And the reality is, the core coffee market is completely commoditized.
Yeah.
And actually, it's heavily controlled by retailers.
Yeah.
And while there are lots of great brands like the Illies and the Lavazzas that are kind of deeply authentic, you know, family-owned businesses that still produce coffee the way they always have, the reality is that actually, you know, where the interesting space probably is outside of that.
Yeah.
And the on-the-go moment is what a lot of people are looking to. And I think there's been more innovation in this space in terms of fruit juices and fruit waters and stuff. We've had a lot of guys from that
fruit waters
on before.
In particular.
But actually, this is a very, you know, clean product. Because there are sort of three or four brands in this space, aren't there?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the wider ready-to-drink...
You don't have to mention your competitors.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
okay.
We deal with the big guys, you know, the coffee shop guys, and we deal with those sort of people. And then, obviously, in sort of smaller brands, there are a number of London-based brands who are doing similar things to us in terms of some are doing sort of dairy, completely dairy-free and oat-based. Others are doing sparkling cold brew coffee. So there's quite a variance
really?
There. To,
I think
yeah,
pass
so,
on the sparkling.
I think I'll definitely pass on the sparkling.
Yeah, so I mean, we've tried to go with a range that's sort of it's quite diverse in terms of flavours. So there's sort of hopefully a cold brew coffee for someone within our range. So, you know, if you're into your dairy-free products, the coconut's there. If you're straight, you know, a black purist coffee drinker, it's there for you as well. So it's kind of trying to build the range for people, really.
You see, I've just tasted the mocha one.
Yeah.
I like that one. because it's not, it doesn't taste like coffee to me.
It's
sweeter
treat.
It's got a really nice sort of taste all on its own. It's like it's a bit of a naughty one.
Yes, that is our naughty one. That's the one we target younger people with, actually.
You're talking to me. Well done. Excellent. But I think what you're saying is there's a sort of taste profile for everybody.
Yeah, effectively. Mm. We tried to make the...
You don't like that, no?
No, it reminds me of something. I'm trying to think what. It really reminds,
you know, it reminds me of that Nesquik, chocolate Nesquik when I was a kid. Do you remember that? You put a teaspoon in milk and then stir it in. You probably weren't even born.
No, I'm such a massive... I say, for me, hot chocolate is one of the great pleasures in life, particularly when you go to places like Mexico or Colombia where they put chili in it.
Here we go. There's a theme.
But, you know, I think this is part of the fun. And I think one of the things we need to break out of, going back to your tea conversation, is, look, what foodies want is variety and things that are different. And actually, there is a very large group of people who love coffee. And in weather like we're experiencing at the moment, you know, if this becomes a trend, you're in a really good place.
Yeah, you are in a very good place, Joe.
Hopefully 2019 will just be the same type of weather. I mean, the thing for us, like, the key thing we're trying to push is obviously that if you go out there now and you want to buy a chilled coffee drink on the go, a lot of them are really, really, really sweetened. Mm. And we try to sort of move it away from that. And obviously, I think, you know, we're talking about the ketchup stuff before, the whole, you know, consumer audience really, we're all sort of addicted to sugar in a way, and it's trying to wean people away from that slowly but surely. And I think that's going to take time, but gradually we're going to get to more cleaner taste profiles, and taste buds will adapt.
Yeah, the data around what the sort of Starbucks Frappuccino has in it from a sugar perspective is just terrifying. Yeah. I don't know the statistics.
Yeah,
it's about the same as having a massive lunch.
Basically, I think it's above 500 from memory.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I'm not sure on the Frappuccinos, but I know on the ready to drink versions, there's about 4.5. There's a teaspoon of sugar, but it fit in every 100 mils of the drink. So, it's quite a lot of sugar.
And are you selling, so at the moment, from a distribution perspective, you're selling mainly in ready-to-go kind of cafes and stuff?
Yeah, so we're in quite a few independents in around Manchester, the North West. We're in Eat 17 in London, so that's sort of grown out into London now. We've got a distributor down here, so we're starting to build accounts down here. We only launched a sort of range in April, so, you know, we're just getting our feet on the ground. We launched onto Amazon 3.5 weeks ago, and we're now Amazon's choice for cold brew coffee.
Good.
So that's quite an interesting one. So within the Amazon, if you put cold brew coffee in, there's all sorts of things that come up, from coffee grounds to cold brew coffee makers, and then there's cool cold brew. You can buy your cold brew coffee ready to go. So, that's been quite interesting. We've got some quite good feedback on that as well.
And are you looking for sort of the national distribution into the big retailers and stuff?
Yeah, we are. We've had some good conversations with retailers so far. I think realistically, we're looking at 2019 before we start breaking into that, just the way the retail windows, obviously the landscape's landed out this year. But we want to get down to food to go, really, and that's where we want to be and position the brand.
Well, two, I would say, top tips for the future.
Definitely.
We see a lot, don't we? But I would really back these guys as being something to look out for.
Definitely. And playing onto the trends, I think, of where things are, which is, you know, actually the right kind of flavour profile, you know, and actually doing stuff with authenticity, which is the game.
Yeah. So that's Joe Devereaux Kelly. And if you want to know about Cool Cold Brew, which I have to say slowly, you need to go on coolcoldbrew.co.uk and you can find out lots about where you can get it from. But absolutely. Amazon's one of them.
Yep.
So look out for that. So four really interesting ones that we've tried. Have you got more than that? Is that your total range?
That's the total range at the moment. Very good. Working on other stuff.
Very good, I'm sure you are.
Espresso martini.
Now you're talking.
Now you're talking.
That's,
it's like if
you
can make
better.
It a martini.
That's all right. I can drink coffee then.
There you
whole
go.
Coffee then.
Because actually I'm wondering, an espresso martini, you should probably use a cold brew, shouldn't you?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
A lot of...
When you make your espresso martini.
I might get some now, yeah.
You should do. A lot of cocktail bars and stuff do make their own cold brew to make their own espresso martinis. Mm. So
suddenly there's a new use case. Sue is like, hang on a second.
All right, I might get some of that now. I might order some. And then we've been speaking to Elizabeth Jones. Her company's on the menu. But if you have never tasted real good ketchup, you need to go onto their website, realgoodketchup.com, and order some. I would advise you and see what you think. If not, they're sold in most Morrisons and Co-ops.
We have a store finder on the website. It's the easiest place to go.
Brilliant. So just go on there. So I'll definitely try that. I'm going to have some more of that in a minute. I'm going to get those crisp things out and have some more of that. Very, very good. So you've been listening to the Food Talk show. Thank you so much to Elizabeth Jones and Joe Devereaux Kelly. We're syndicated to radio stations across the UK and further afield, as well as being available on Podbean, iTunes and the podcast app on your phone. Thank you to my fellow presenter, Ollie Lloyd, of Great British Chefs. Thank you, Ollie. We like tasting stuff, don't we?
We love it.
Good fun. If you want to recommend any future guests, someone doing something groundbreaking in the food sector, get in touch with us via Twitter on @FoodTalkShow. Or if you want to listen to any of our hundreds of podcasts, go to foodtalk.co.uk or via Great British Chefs. Have a good week. Bye.